Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. This week, another 160 unmarked and undocumented graves were discovered at a former residential school in British Columbia. It's the latest in a series of similar revelations at institutions where Indigenous children endured the country's attempts at forced assimilation. Coming up, we'll discuss what's being done and what should be done to counteract the continuing grief the situation is bringing on Indigenous people. We go live right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Another discovery of unmarked graves near a site of a former Indian residential school in British Columbia. A local BC First Nation says it has found more than 160 undocumented unmarked graves. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
The discovery on Penalakit Island off the coast of Vancouver Island was confirmed by the chief of the Penalakit tribe, Joan Brown. The island, a small one, was once home to the Cooper Island Industrial School. It was run by the Roman Catholic Church from 1890 to 1975. In a statement, Brown said, "We understand that many of our brothers and sisters from our neighboring communities attended the Cooper Island Industrial School. We also recognized with a tremendous amount of grief and loss that too many did not return home." Cynthia Wesley Esquimaux is with the National Center for Truth and Reconciliation. She says she's not surprised by this discovery.
We have been talking about this for decades, and many of the survivors have said repeatedly that there were children that were buried, that were killed, or that died of various things, and they knew that they were there. And I think the most unfortunate thing was that people didn't believe them. And now, of course, there's this evidence that, in fact, this happened.
The Penalakit Nation is hosting two healing sessions on the island in the weeks ahead and a march for children. One survivor of the school says he wants the provincial and Canadian governments to step up to help Indigenous people still reeling from the realities of the residential schools. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
California Assemblymember James Ramos and tribal leaders are urging the state Senate to pass a bill to replace a statue of Junipero Serra, the founder of the California Mission System. Ramos's bill, AB 338, replaces the statue on the grounds of the state capitol in Sacramento with a monument to honor tribes. On Wednesday, Ramos and members of the Central California Tribal Chairpersons Association urged for the bill's passage. Assemblymember Ramos.
It's time for us and our voice of the Californian people to be elevated, to bring attention to these issues of the Spanish missionary period and how much destruction has meant to our people, as well as other areas that now we're touching into, the boarding schools and that dark period of history. Now is the time for us to gather together in one accord and through unity to let our voices be heard. And it's not just about our voices here today. It's about our ancestors and our elders that are buried in the ground in the state of California, that it's also time for their voice to be heard of what truly happened to them in the state of California.
Lloyd Matheson is chairperson of the Chicken Ranch Rancheria.
We just want the truth to be told, you know, not just one side, not the other, just the truth, to get it out there. So we could start the healing process. We see everything that's going up in Canada right now, and we just want the things here so the truth can get out, so we can finally start that process for our people. So everyone always says, you know, get over it. You know, it happened so long ago, but it's so hard for us to say get over it when no one knows exactly what happened. They don't know what they're saying when they say get over that. So we want the truth to be told so we can actually start that for ourselves, start it for our ancestors so they could be at peace and everything else.
Ramos says the bill has been released out of a committee to the Senate floor. He's urging for its passage and to be signed into law. Navajo Nation gaming facilities are now reopened to the public. The tribe's casinos in Arizona and New Mexico were shut down in March 2020 due to the pandemic. Some were operating at limited capacity for tribal citizens only. The casinos are now operating at 50%. As COVID-19 cases remain low, the reservation is also now open to visitors. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
We'll be right back. National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by Amerind, Indian Country's 100% tribally owned insurance partner. Information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto needs at amerind.com.
Support by AARP. The Native Urban Elder Needs Assessment Survey will provide data to improve urban Indian elder health equity. Elders are underrepresented in data, and you can help. Info and survey at uiacoalition.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, coming to you live from my homelands, Oshawa-Tui. Revelations of unmarked and undocumented graves at former Canadian residential school sites have been ongoing since May of this year. Most recently, a tribe in British Columbia said on Tuesday they have identified the remains of 160 people that had not been previously disclosed or documented. Today, we'll be talking about the continuing trauma that these discoveries are causing both in Canada and in the U.S. And a trigger warning, our show may include details that could be upsetting for some listeners. And if you are experiencing trauma, you can reach out to Canada's Indian Residential School Survivors and Family Crisis Line 24 hours a day at 1-866-925-4419. And for listeners in the United States, there are a number of resources too, including the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK. That's 8255. And we are going to get updates on the current situation and hear some of the ideas about going forward. And if you'd like to join our conversation today, you can reach us at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And today we are going to start off in British Columbia. With us today in Delta is Angela White, and she is Executive Director of the Indian Residential School Survivors Society of British Columbia. And she is Sanemuch, and it's our pleasure to have her here with us today. Angela, welcome.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure.
Well, Angela, we really appreciate you being here today, and just want to turn it over to you and hearing where things currently stand with this latest discovery and how heavy this is weighing. I'll just open the floor to you if you can just share some of that.
Thank you. It's not just a provincial crisis and trauma that's sweeping over our nation. It's national and international at this point. And the reason is that these, and I don't like calling them discoveries because it is something that we have always known about, that our survivors have always talked about. It's an uncovering or an unveiling of that truth that was silenced for so many, many years. And it's not. And what's happening now is it's peeling back those layers of memories and traumas of survivors that attended these schools, and triggering their recollections of things that they were forced to do or things that they had witnessed, and bringing up these memories that they have pushed down for their entire lives, because as many of us know, that they were always told that they were worthless, that no one would ever believe them, and that remained true up until the discovery of the 215 in Kamloops. So not only is it allowing the survivors to open up and talk about their experiences, it's also bringing forward their recollections of, especially to our line, you know, when I was a kid and I attended the school, they had a, you know, there might be unmarked graves at these schools. So that we're also collecting those data from the testimonies now of actually locations and bringing it forward. But it is heavy. It's not just the Indigenous population. It's opening the eyes of the non-Indigenous populations onto these truths, because people believe it's a long time ago when we're only maybe one generation out from when this, when those residential schools were impacting our children and being taken away and placed into those institutions.
Sure. And I know that we've heard many stories about all of that, and just being able to focus in on this today, it's important. And headlines are going on. People are talking about this. It is all over social media. And recently, Canada Day seemed to spark even more about people coming forward about this atrocity. And as the numbers, you know, continue to rise in all of this. And Angela, can you describe a little bit about some of this coming together and people, you know, making it known that they are not going to stand for this?
You're absolutely correct. And Canada Day was a marker in our in Canadian history. And we had many, many allies come forward and support the idea of having a day of mourning, because this was, as Indigenous populations, we mourn for the losses. And these are losses that we've always known about, but we want to make sure that they are recognized. The numbers right now stand in Canada of 1,665 unmarked graves. And we know it's going to be increasing on a regular basis, because every other community that had residential schools in at these at within their communities are starting to work. We have fires here in BC too, so the air quality isn't that great right now. So that being said, Canada Day was a place where we actually were out and about and providing. We weren't boycotting the day. It was more of a day of acknowledgement and a day of recognition, a day of saying, look, enough is enough, and we are not going to stand idly by in silence, that we are going to be starting to take action and have our voices be heard. And this was one way of doing it. And to see the sea of orange across this country was humbling. And, you know, it just it creates discussion, as you were saying, and bringing that recognition to where it needs to, because this isn't something that happened 150 years ago.
And Angela, can you explain the significance of orange? Because I know that people are seeing a lot of that on social media. People are even changing their profile pictures just to simply the color orange. Can you explain that?
It all started with September 30th. That is a day when RCMP nurses, engine agents would come into communities and start taking kids and bringing them into these institutions. And so Phyllis Webstaff from Williams Lake had recalled that when she actually was being brought to one of these schools, her mom brought her out and bought her a really nice outfit for her first day of school, and it was an orange shirt. And so when she packed it, they went, all of her new clothes, her new hair, all of that, brought it to the school in her little suitcase. And the moment she walked into the school, the nun took her suitcase, put it in a fire, and she never got to wear her new brand new orange shirt for her first day of school. So that's where the significance comes from. It comes from a survivor that had these recollections, and she wrote a book about it called Orange Shirt Day. And she actually has a nonprofit up here too that recognizes this as Orange Shirt Day. And Canada just recently put into legislation to recognize September 30th as Orange Shirt Day here in this country, and that's where Orange Shirt comes from, in memory and recognition and honoring all children that went to residential school and all children that did not make it home.
Angela, thank you for sharing that, because I know people have been wondering, and we haven't been able to share that story on air yet. And so with all of this, this comes with a lot of heaviness, and especially on survivors or families who are left behind. Angela, can we talk a little bit about what it looks like you know, or just how heavy things are and some of the resources that are out there for people who are being triggered by all of this.
Mm-hmm. Canada has always put in place, since the settlement agreement that came into law here, and that was as survivors brought forward their stories and brought Canada and the church to court. They then, instead of going to court, they created a settlement agreement. There was a lot of cons when it comes to that agreement because there was deadlines and people weren't ready to share their story and whatnot. So when that actually came into effect, they created a 24-hour national crisis line. And over the years, that was specific for Indian residential schools. So those are available 24/7, 7 days a week. In British Columbia, we have also other smaller organizations that do very similar work, especially since the unmarked graves have been uncovered that Kuas Crisis Line over on Vancouver Island is available 24/7. They also have a youth line. Fountain Leyland is an addictions recovery place, but it also provides trauma care. So what they do is you go in, if you are a residential school survivor, intergen, you can do an application, they go through it, you can go in on one of their scheduled times, and they actually work on the childhood trauma that you had endured so that you can actually start recovering from that. And then there's our organization, the Indian Residential School Survivor Society, and we have enacted since the 215 a 24-hour hotline for survivors to call. And most of them are calling for just to have a safe space to share their story without the worry of triggering or harming their own family members. And that's been really important to them, and that they appreciate the fact that one.
And having that space is really important. And you know what? Just thinking of all this, I'm going to reshare the number of the Indian Residential School Survivors and Family Crisis Line, which is open 24 hours a day. It's 1-866-925-4419. We'll continue with the conversation, learning more about what all of this means. But we are definitely looking forward to adding your voice into this conversation, too. Anything you want to share, we sure hope you'll dial in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to all of your calls. This month, we are turning to Matt Mack, a Garden Hill First Nation musician who's known for hard-hitting beats like this. Girl, you're my escape with you. This young self-taught artist will be with us on the next Native America Calling, where he'll share some more about his debut album, 2020.
Support by Roswell Park, who know tribal communities face persistent challenges in health equity, such as cancer and higher death rates. The Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center is dedicated to advancing cancer research that will lead to translatable science, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous populations worldwide. Are you at high risk for cancer? A no-charge online assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
Thanks for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Mesleta Pueblo, and today we are talking about residential school in Canada and some of the discoveries that are being made. And I really like the way our guest set us straight by saying an unraveling of truth, an unveiling of truth when it comes to all of this. And so we turn to many people today to hear what is going on in Canada, but also thinking about how heavy all of this weighs on our listening audience. If you would like to join us, you can give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We definitely look forward to your calls. And I'm going to go ahead and bring our guest back in. Angela White is with us. She is the Executive Director of the Indian Residential School Survivor Society of British Columbia. And Angela, please, if there is anything more you'd like to share about how important it is that we acknowledge that there is healing going on with this story sharing and how much more work needs to be done to provide that space. Angela, go ahead.
Thank you. I think, and I can only speak from our place of experience up here in Canada, especially British Columbia, and knowing that allowing survivors to have a safe space, whether it's just in a culturally safe space or just another place where they can have that ability to feel free to speak, is so important that every time that they share, one of my elders has said, every time you say the words out, that a relief that sends up all of those prayers up to Creator, and the Creator will take care of those. And then the next time you share, it will be a little less painful and a little less triggering. So that's how that healing comes from a cultural perspective, and I completely believe that. As the United States moves forward with their unveiling, I think the biggest important step is to ensure that these type of like our organization is up and running and available and having those 24-hour crisis lines available for survivors for whenever they need to do it. And knowing that knowing that what's coming, those spaces need to be available completely 100%.
Well, thank you for that. And, you know, there's more work to be done in all of this. And there is another guest who's here with us today who's going to provide another perspective. Let's go to Winnipeg, Manitoba, in Canada. With us today, we have Nahani Fontaine, who is an elected official and member of the Manitoba Legislative Assembly. She is from the Sagin Anishinaabe First Nation. Our pleasure to have her here with us. Nahani, welcome to Native America Calling.
Thank you, Miigwech, for having me.
And Nahani, tell me a little bit about some of the work that you are doing on this issue and some of the things you'd really like to see happen.
On residential schools, on the discovery of the children, right?
Yes.
Yeah, sorry. I apologize. It was a little bit difficult to hear some of the conversation. Look, you know, right now Canada is facing and is in the midst of its own reckoning, right? We know that for years and years and years, residential school survivors have been talking about and trying to share with the Canadian public and with government officials the reality that Indian children, that Indigenous children were killed for a variety of different reasons and buried in unmarked graves in residential schools across our territories from coast to coast to coast. And I would suggest that, you know, other than the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, they were not believed, right? There are stories of children having to bury their classmates and nobody really believed them. And so what's happening right now is that Canada is in a position where you can no longer deny the horrors and the genocide that occurred in residential schools. You cannot deny it, right? For the last 6 weeks, you know, every other week there's new discoveries of children in unmarked graves. And so, you know, I am the granddaughter of a residential school survivor and the granddaughter of a day school survivor. And many of my relatives went to residential schools. And of course, like many Indigenous peoples across our territories, our family also dealt with the legacy of residential schools, right? So, you know, my mom, while she did not go to residential schools, you know, was sexually exploited by the time she was 13. And ended up dying with, you know, a heroin overdose. So myself as well in my, you know, I only quit drinking and doing drugs when I was 20 because I was dealing with all of that, right? So, like so many Indigenous peoples, to this very moment, we're dealing with the consequences of that legacy of residential schools. And so, you know, as an elected official, I try to bring in that history, that truth, and our people into the Manitoba legislature. Because when you look at legislatures across the country, those spaces, those buildings were never meant for our people. Our people were never even imagined that we would be in those spaces, you know, trying to enact law or fight for our people or fight for all people. And so I try to bring in that truth at every opportunity that I have. And what's going on right now is in Manitoba, the province that I'm from, right now we have a conservative government, and we have a premier who is actually pretty much trying to deny the history and, you know, present a revisionist narrative to the public. It was only last week that Premier Brian Pallister basically said that newcomers came here, like settlers came here to build. They didn't mean to do anything wrong. They didn't mean to do harm. And so it's quite astonishing that even in the midst of Canada's reckoning, even in the midst of all of the discovery of little ones, little babies, children, even in the midst of that, you will still have individuals that are in immense positions of privilege and power that are attempting to erase or deny or diminish the colonial history, including when you do that, including finding thousands of little ones in unmarked graves.
And it's just devastating, even just hearing those last few sentences that you shared. And when this is what people are faced with and thinking about the denial of some people's stories over the years of this happening or even being involved or witnessing some of this, Nahani, is there anything you'd like to tell listeners or survivors right now about how important it is for them to really take care of themselves?
To really,
Just really taking care of themselves and making sure that they're checking in with places and resources or even sharing what they feel comfortable in sharing. Why is it important to do this? And in case we have any survivors listening in today.
Yeah. I mean, if survivors are able to, right? Like, we keep calling upon survivors to share their stories and share their narratives, which then ultimately ends up re-traumatizing and re-victimizing themselves, right? And why do they have to do that? They have to do that because as Indigenous peoples, we're constantly trying to get non-Indigenous peoples to see us as humanize and to understand the colonial history. And yet that trauma and that burden is always on Indigenous peoples to do so, right? And so I would never say to residential school survivors, like, you need to keep telling your story. Like, if they are able to and they have the support, then absolutely, if they're able to share those stories, because, you know, the fact that we still have individuals that continue to deny this history shows how far away we truly are in Canada from reconciliation. But, you know, I think it's important, like you said, it's important to check in and to offer that support to residential school survivors. You know, when the first discovery in Kamloops of the 215 children, you know, I kind of digested this news, which was just shocking. It was so shocking, and I was just so devastated. But the next day, right away, I called one of my uncles who suffered immensely when he was in residential schools. In fact, he got one of the highest settlements across Canada, which was based on the amount of abuse that he went through in residential schools. And I just checked in on him and I said, you know, are you okay? I just want to check in, see how you're doing. So I think that that is a really important piece. I think it's a really important piece for us as relatives to check in on our relatives, but it's also really important for Canadians, for non-Indigenous people. Like, you know, go above and beyond. What can you do for residential school survivors? What can you do for Indigenous peoples? Like, here's a, you know, people for so long on so many different issues, you know, I'll have non-Indigenous people come up to me and they'll say, you know, what can I do? How can I help? And that's great, right? And there's so many things that non-Indigenous peoples can do. They can offer that support. They can pay Indigenous people. They can make donations to, you know, Indigenous organizations. They can volunteer. They can feed people. There's so much that people can do right now as Indigenous peoples are in mourning, you know, and you know, when the news was starting to come out and people were kind of reaching out to me. And at one point I had to put a social media post on Twitter and everywhere, like, don't come and ask me for more emotional labor or more labor in its totality. Like, I'm in mourning. I'm in mourning with my people, right? Like, people have to do that work themselves as well. But it is important to do that work. It is important, as uncomfortable and brutal as the history may be, to confront it head on, to learn everything that you can, and to no longer be in denial of what is our colonial history / legacy here in Canada.
Thank you for that. And Nahani, I know you got to get going here at the break. So I do also want to give you a moment to share any thoughts about accountability and thinking about the role that justice has played in all of this, or the actions or review on what has been done so far, or even investigations. Is there anything there you'd like to share?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we have the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and basically it is a roadmap. It's all laid out there. The framework on what Canada and provinces and non-Indigenous peoples can do to rectify that history is all laid out for people in the Truth and Reconciliation's calls to action. It's all there. And so we need governments at all levels to commit to implementing each and every one of those recommendations, right? So there's that piece. But then there's the other piece, you know, and a lot of people are starting to talk about it. It's the accountability for, let's say, the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church still owes $25 million to residential school survivors. Get that money and pay them, right? Like, we've seen across the country in the last many years, we've seen the Catholic Church invest over $300 million into new churches, new whatever it is, and yet they owe Indian residential school survivors $25 million. So they've been able to come up with $300 million, but not the $25 million that they owe residential school survivors. Pay residential school survivors what you owe them. So there's that. Then the third piece, and this involves, again, the Catholic Church, is release all of the documents that need to be released so that we can find out, so that families can find out where their little ones were, what happened, and bring them home, ultimately repatriate them. The government, the federal government and provincial governments, have to support First Nation communities to be able to undertake that work, to see where former residential school sites, if there are any little ones that are still in unmarked graves. My community of Saugeen First Nation had a residential school. We had it in our community. We've always known that there were little ones in unmarked graves, right? There are so many communities across the country that need to have that work done. And again, it will be up to communities what they want to do. But, you know, maybe it is an exercise in the repatriation of those little ones, and maybe it's not. But certainly every family that lost a child in that residential school era deserves to know where their little one is. No other non-Indigenous Canadian would accept not knowing where their children went, right? I mean, obviously it would never happen to them, but had it happened, no non-Indigenous children or person would ever accept not knowing where their child was. But as Indigenous people, we're expected just like, oh, okay, there's thousands of kids that are in unmarked graves. Well, okay, just move on from that. No. You know, we need politicians. We need politicians to step up, put their money where their mouth is and stop just giving kind of platitudes about, you know, oh, this is just so devastating and stuff. Put your money where your mouth is. Support communities to get this work done.
And Nahani, thank you for being here with us. And real quick, any websites to share or resources to get more information real quick, please?
Yeah, I would suggest that the you know, starting with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, it's all online. You just have to Google it. The whole report is there. And it, you know, it's important to know that that comes from residential school survivors, right? Like that comes from their testimonies. And it is something that is a wealth of information and provides the blueprint on how to move forward.
Thank you for that, Nahani Fontaine, for being here with us today. And she is an elected official and member of the Manitoba Legislative Assembly. And we appreciate you being here. And we're going to continue with this conversation, too. If you'd like to join us, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And even words of support for those who are really closely tied to all of this. We know that there were also residential schools here in the States, and survivors here too are also, you know, feeling a lot of this. Our thoughts definitely go out to you and your family. And, you know, we'll keep the phone lines open if there's anything you want to share. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And if you need to call in anonymously, we'll take your calls too. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And when we think about accountability and all of this, what should be done? What are some of the things that we really think need to be put in place? Like to hear your thoughts on that too. Hope you'll dial in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to adding your voice to the conversation.
As COVID-19 vaccines are becoming available, Americans are eager to learn more, but frustrated about where to find answers. That's why AARP is working to protect Americans 50-plus by connecting you to the latest information. You can learn who's eligible for the COVID-19 vaccine in your state, when, where, and how to get it, and what you might want to discuss with your doctor at aarp.org/vaccineinfo. AARP supports this program.
Thanks for tuning in to Native America Calling, and there is still time to get in on our discussion today about former residential schools and boarding schools and the discovery of unmarked and undocumented graves. If there's anything you'd like to share, give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Right now, we're going to go to Minneapolis, Minnesota. With us on the line is Christine Dindisi McCleave. And she is the Chief Executive Officer for the National Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition. And she's a citizen of the Turtle Mountain Ojibwe Nation. My pleasure to have her here with us. Christine, welcome to Native America Calling.
Thank you for having me.
And Christine, just open the floor. Any comments you'd like to start with?
Wow, it's been really, really powerful to hear from our other two guests today, and just want to echo a lot of the same sentiments. You know, we feel a strong connection to our relatives. You know, before that colonial border was established, there wasn't that separation of, you know, United States and Canada. And so we really feel like we're in this together, even though there was a little bit of a different policy here in the U.S., very similar experience. Absolutely, you know, with a lot of the same horrific impacts. And so, you know, we can talk about the similarities and differences, but just on an emotional, spiritual level, we really feel like we're in this together.
And Christine, what is some of the work that you feel needs to be done in just knowing that this conversation is going on in Canada and it's starting here in the States too? What are some of the things you really hope are going to be put in place?
Well, we absolutely applaud the initiative that was launched by Secretary Halland at the Department of the Interior, but we also have been calling for a truth commission since the beginning of our organization as a nonprofit. In fact, that's why we were formed from a grassroots movement that included people in Canada. And they said, you know, we need a commission to take place in the United States. And this happened while the commission in Canada was already underway. And so we're hopeful that this investigation by the Department of the Interior will definitely support an actual federal truth commission to take place. So last year, when Deborah Haaland was in Congress, she introduced a bill for a U.S. Truth and Healing Commission on Indian boarding schools. And we're working with legislators to get that reintroduced this year. We think that the investigation timeline is a little short and that they won't be able to fully explore all the boarding schools in this country. We had, you know, twice as many as they had in Canada. And so the timeline on that report is that it'll be due to the secretary in April of 2022. And we know that's not enough time and that more investigation will be needed. So a commission would finish out, you know, the investigation or complement it, as well as collect testimony from survivors. You know, so like a lot of what we've heard already on the show today really emphasizes the importance of telling this story from our perspective as Indigenous peoples, hearing, you know, exactly what was experienced by those students in those schools. And so that's a priority in terms of looking at this from a federal policy standpoint and examining the impacts, as well as, you know, the healing that is needed in our communities, and looking at this from, you know, a standpoint of how do we move forward and what do we need, what kinds of supports and resources do we need in our communities to heal what was broken and be able to move forward as stronger nations.
And Christine, can you break that down even further about when we say a process of healing? Because when we're talking about this, we're also talking about not only the survivor, but the people in their family, the generations that come after them, the community that they are a part of, and just knowing that, you know, some of the things that are being faced in different tribal communities stem from some of these atrocities. And what about just really understanding how big of a circle of healing that has to happen that resonates around the different survivors? And, you know, any thoughts on how we got to keep bringing this up as we talk about moving forward or implementing things, that it is, everyone is affected when one person is affected? Anything you'd like to add to that, Christine?
Yeah, I think you said it pretty well. But, you know, I think it's going to be many healing circles that are going to be needed. And we know that healing needs to take place on an individual level and then within families and communities and nations, right? So it's going to be a process. And we at the coalition, you know, because we're national and we work with so many different tribal communities, both, you know, tribal nations and urban Indian communities, it's going to look different depending on where you're at. It needs to be culturally relevant. It should be community led. And, you know, in my sense is that there will be a cross-section of what we know from Western science in terms of mental and behavioral health. There are some tools, you know, that help us in terms of, you know, the conversation that was happening earlier about survivors and when they share, are they being re-traumatized? And we want to make sure that, you know, we are protecting them and offering support and care for them. But at the same time, you know, not everyone actually is reliving their trauma when they talk about it, depending on how far they've gotten along in their healing journey. You know, there are some therapies that help you go back to those memories and kind of rewire your brain around them so that when you retell the story, you're not actually reliving it, that your central nervous system is not responding like you're actually, you know, experiencing the trauma and the threat again in real life time. So, you know, we couple, you know, some of these Western therapies with our traditional ways and what we know about healing in our specific tribal cultures. And that's a really powerful combination. And we have all the tools that we need to heal. We just need to be having the conversations, doing the work, And like I said, that will happen at an individual level. That needs to happen at a collective level. It needs to involve all sectors of society. It needs to be grassroots and spiritual led. It needs to happen at, you know, a policy level, a governmental level. We need the support from education and counselors and healers. And so this is really, you know, it's when you think about it and how colonization played out around the globe and impacted Indigenous communities much the same all over the, you know, the world, this is a global movement about healing for humanity. This is about how we treat each other as human beings.
It is. And you know what? I think we might have a caller on the line. I'm going to go ahead and give it a try. Let's go to Thomas in Seattle, Washington, tuned in online. Thomas, welcome to Native America Calling. Go ahead, share your thoughts.
Good afternoon. Thank
you. Good day.
Yes. Back on
You know what, Thomas? I'm having a really hard time hearing you. Let's see if we might be able to get a better connection. So hang tight. Studio's going to talk to you. And Christine, I understand that the Indian Residential School Survivor Society has a helpline. Can you share that, please?
Oh, well, I know they have one in Canada, and we don't have one here in the U.S. That is something that we're working on trying to get implemented. So I don't actually have information about the one that they have in Canada.
Okay. Sorry about that. And I'm connecting you to things, different things. But Christine, with all of this, there's so much. And you know, we can only dedicate an hour at talk about it an hour at a time. And what are some of the things that you really want people to understand about this that are either missing in news reports or missing in documents or legislation that's being put forward? Is there anything that you'd like to share that people really need to think about or start considering?
Well, I think the you know, that's a big question. Who are we talking about, right? Because if we're talking about our Native communities and our relatives, then, you know, it's a much different answer about what we need to be considering. I think we just need to be coming together and having these conversations, you know, in our families and our communities right now, especially in our families. My grandfather went to a Catholic Indian boarding school, and he never wanted to talk about it. So by the time I started working at the coalition, he had already passed on, and I was asking my mom and my aunt and my uncle about, you know, what years did he go there? Did he ever say anything about, you know, his experience there? And they said, no, he just said he never wanted to step foot in the Catholic Church again, and that he never wanted to talk about it. So we don't know what happened to him, and we can just, you know, assume it was negative. And that there was, you know, something he carried for a long time, that he was very angry and resentful at the church. And, you know, it's important. I know it's difficult to talk about. I believe I was on your guys' show back in 2017. I said the same thing. We had a campaign at the time to break the silence and begin the healing, because it's hard to talk about the abuse that happened. And, you know, that's where we definitely want people to get the support that they need, you know, from counselors and healers, when they start to talk about these things, if they are just breaking the silence about something they never shared before, that's a big thing. And it's important to share so that our families know what happened to our relatives and how that affected them for the rest of their lives and affected their relationships and the family as a whole. These are really important stories to help us in our healing, even though when they first come to light, it does bring up a lot of pain.
It does. And Christine, there are all kinds of listeners in our audience today. Is there anything you have a message for survivors?
Gosh, I just, you know, for any survivors who are listening, we love you. We honor you and all of your experiences that you had whether they some of them were positive experiences or not. And we just value you and your voice and want to be here to support you right now.
And Christine, for people, if they're looking for resources to understand, you know, how this affects Native nations here in the States, is there anything you'd like to share?
Oh, yeah. Thanks for reminding me. So the Boarding School Healing Coalition website is boardingschoolhealing.org. And there's a lot of resources there, actually, for people. You could spend some time digging into the website. We've got educational resources. We have a curriculum that's free to download for K through 12 students. Really, you know, adults could use that curriculum, too, if you're so inclined. There is a list, a comprehensive list of the boarding schools in the United States that was conducted, you know, by independent researchers, because the federal government has yet to publish such a list on its own. You know, the Interior is investigating it right now, so we'll see what they come up with in terms of the number of schools that we've been able to find. There's also some resources for healing there. Although we don't have a hotline, we do have a document that lists some resources and other hotlines that that people can call if they need to speak to someone about mental health and things like that.
And I appreciate that. And Christine, just thinking about, you know, what is going on in Canada, are there any more lessons that we can learn about either taking a look at here or even supporting our Indigenous brothers and sisters in Canada? Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've always looked to Canada, at the coalition since we've been around, which is for a pretty short time considering the, you know, perspective. But we've always looked to Canada as, you know, we want to learn from the commission that they had and, you know, the call to action, the report that came out of that Truth Commission. And now what's happening really highlights this and other things, you know, that caused the hashtag Reconciliation is Dead to trend and all of that really makes us look at, you know, what is reconciliation and what can a commission accomplish, right? It's a beginning. It's not the end all be all. And that's what we really feel like is coming to light right now. And other people who are establishing truth commissions on, you know, on various issues around the country and around the world, these truth commissions are powerful tools. But there's other elements that need to be included. After the truth, what comes next? You know, there should be some element of justice. There should be reparations for whatever was damaged or lost or broken or taken. And those should be determined by the survivors and the victims. And then there's that question about reconciliation. And, you know, that might not be the right term for what comes next. You know, maybe it's transformation. It should definitely include a promise not to repeat the harms of the past. The hope here is for the evolution of humanity to move beyond genociding each other, right?
Yes, indeed. And we got to start wrapping things up. Christine, final comment.
I think that was a good one. I don't know if I can top it. The evolution of humanity. How can I top that?
Boy, there's so much. And, you know, I really appreciate everybody who has been here to just kind of think out loud in some of this. And really, there's just so much more to be talked about. But I do want to leave you with those two numbers that we started off with. You know, if there's somebody that you feel you need to talk to, if any of this has brought up different feelings and thinking about people in your circle and who you can talk to. A couple of numbers. Again, the Indian Residential School Survivors and Family Crisis Line is open 24 hours a day at 1-866-925-4419. Also, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 1-800-273-TALK, 1-800-273-8255. And I really appreciate everybody who's been on the line with us today. Tomorrow, we sure hope you will tune back in. It is our July Music Maker. We'll be meeting with a self-taught musician Matt Mack. I'm Tara Gatewood. Thank you for joining us today here on Native America Calling. Visit us online too, nativeamericacalling.com.
Looking to get your high school diploma? Southwestern Indian Polytechnic Institute offers Native Americans ages 18 or older training and preparation courses for the high school equivalency diplomas, in person and online, beginning September 6th. This no-charge program includes testing fees and other resources will be available to help with supplies and living expenses. Space is limited. Application deadline is August 6th. More by calling 505-382-4287 or at sipi.edu, who support this show.
Buju, Gunawena Moshkia Ya Agbao, Dominawad, Jimino Kunayewad, Minawa, Jibindage Biagazawad, Jidabaygesiguan Ananda Wiendwa, Mawadishiwain, insurekidsnow.gov, Gemaganoj 1-877-KIDS-NOW, Gawandinagadeg, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.